Cardinals' six-game winning streak is the longest in Major League Baseball this year. Junior gets it up into the wind. Deep right field. Gone! And the Royals hang a 9 on the scoreboard in the first inning.
Well, well, well. How about them Royals? Sports Ticket brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive and Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. Royals took all the drama out of it yesterday. Usually it's the Royals down 9-0 by the time the third inning rolls around. Yesterday, the Royals sent 15 men to the plate in the first inning. That's 1.5 times through their lineup. They scored 9 runs in the first, go on to crush the Astros to complete a 3-game sweep. 13-3 was the final. Their 7th straight victory. Vinny Pascatino, after a 5 RBI night Wednesday, 2 run single, then a RBI single in Nelson Velasquez. Nick Lofton drove in 2 with a single. Mikel Garcia had a 2-run single. Bobby Witt Jr. ended the inning with a 2-run homer. 9-0. Astros starter Hunter Brown didn't make it out of the first. Gave up 9 runs on 11 hits and a walk in just 2/3. He was a sacrificial lamb. Brady Singer moved to 2-0 with the tremendous run support. Went just 5 innings, all he needed to do. Gave up 1 run on 5 hits. Bobby Witt Jr. is the first player in Royals history with 4 hits, 4 runs scored, 5 RBIs, 2 home runs, and a stolen base in 1 game. Since the Royals came in the league in 1969, that has only been done 14 times in Major League Baseball history. Royals doing really good things on the positive side. How many times over the years have we like, hey, the Royals set a new record for futility? It is refreshing. Matt Cotrero, manager of the Royals, on that big first inning.
What led to it was a lot of really good concentrated at-bats. You know, he's throwing a cutter, guys taking it the other way, being patient. And when he threw his curveball, they were on it, and they didn't try to do too much with it. What does it say about the offense is that, you know, they had a really good plan. They stuck with it. You know, you're always going to need some luck in those situations to get string that many hits together in one inning. But regardless, they put good at-bats together.
So the Royals sweep a 7-game homestand against the White Sox and the Astros. The Royals are now 9-4. Have you ever had a situation where you knew you were right and a person keeps arguing with you?
Absolutely.
And you absolutely know you're right.
Yes.
And they keep arguing with you and you're just like, would you just stop? I do this for a living. I got into this interesting little slight disagreement. It wasn't major, but it was kind of interesting to me. And that was, I was like, hey, you know, talking Royals baseball, Royals won 7 in a row and so forth and so on. And I said, pretty cool to sweep the White Sox in 4, the Astros in 3. And it's like, well, the White Sox wasn't a 4-game series. I'm like, yes, it was. No, it wasn't. I'm like, yes, it was. No, they started their winning streak in Baltimore. I said, no, they didn't. They lost the last game in Baltimore when the bullpen blew the lead. I said, trust me, I do this for a living. And I talked about it on the show just earlier this morning. And I usually do my research before I go talking about these things. The Royals had a 4-game series against White Sox. Why did I know that? Because we talked on the show before the series began that the Royals needed to take at least 3 out of 4.
Yeah.
Because the White Sox are so bad. So I knew the Royals had a 7-game winning streak. I knew they're all at home. And I knew it was 4 against the White Sox. I knew it was 3 against the Astros. And yet, it was... I was just like, dude, you might want to just, I mean, I do know, I do this for a living. It's kind of like me going up to a broadcast engineer and telling him he's wrong when he knows what he's doing. So am I wrong? Yes, I've been wrong many times in my life.
Hell yeah.
But on that one, sure, when you know, what's it feel like when you absolutely know you're right and the other person, you know, 1,000% is wrong and yet they keep disagreeing with you? Like, how do you handle that? Do you give up? I mean, why would you give up? You're the one that's right.
It's so frustrating because that's the ultimate question, right? Like, how do you?
And you have a phone usually on you, so you can just go ahead and check it real quick.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Yeah.
If there's even like a second time that the person disagrees with me, I'm going to be like, well, I have a computer in my pocket. I'm going to show you
what
the deal
out,
is here.
Even though I know.
Yeah. I'm just going to be like, if you don't want to believe me.
Yeah.
Believe this schedule that the Kansas City Royals have on. This is the example, right?
Right.
That the Kansas City Royals have on their website that says they won against the White Sox Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, had a day off, and then won 3 games against the Astros on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. That's 7 at home, and they also lost 2 out of 3 in Baltimore. including the last game they played in Baltimore.
And I'm a pretty staunch Royals fan, so I'm usually pretty much on top of that. And as I said, I went off my memory, and now I looked it up. I was absolutely right.
Oh yeah,
they blew the night. They blew the lead against the Orioles in the final game of the series. Lost 2 out of 3 to Baltimore. Lost 2 out of 3 to Minnesota to start the year. And now they've won 7 in a row. They're 9-2 at home. I mean, yeah. So
yeah, without blown leads by the bullpen, they might have a 10-game winning streak.
They might
right now.
They might.
Who knows what the rest of it would go like? But
absolutely, the Royals, their last 11 games, have outscored the opposition by 46 runs. That is the best run differential in any 11-game span by any Royals team since 77. The Royals offensively, and this is funny because I was talking last week about, you know, my biggest concern is the offense. And all of a sudden, the offense is tearing the cover off the ball.
Yeah.
Batting average are tied for 3rd in the American League. They lead the American League in slugging, OPS, runs scored, home runs, and stolen bases. And they've given up the least amount of home runs by any pitching staff. That's a pretty good scenario in what is the long ball era. Pretty impressive. The Royals are off to New York to take on the Mets, who are 5-7, but 1-5 at home. And these games will be at the Mets' home at Shea Stadium. Mets are 5-7, as I mentioned, 6-10. Start of a 3-game series between the Mets and the Royals. Michael Wacha, 1-0. Wacha, Wacha, Wacha. With a 2.25 ERA for the Royals, will face Luis Severino of the Mets, who, remember, he was really good with the Yankees for about a year or two. Mm-hmm. Cy Young candidate, and then just kind of fell off the earth, had some injuries. He's now still in New York, but with the Mets. All right.
I want to say the leading the league in home runs thing is wild to me because they've played 10 of their 13 games at home.
Uh-huh.
And it's usually harder for them to hit home runs at home because they're in a pitcher's ballpark, is what they always say, right?
Right.
And that's what really interests me about it. The run differential is wild. That's crazy to me. This early in the season to have that going for the Royals, because that's usually not the case, like, ever, like you said, since 1977 or whatever it was. But that leading the league at home runs with 10 of the 13 games at home is very impressive for me.
You know, the Royals are doing such a good job, winning 7 in a row. They're 9-4, and they're, as I said, I think they're 8-2 at home. So they have a lot of their games at home so far. Now they hit the road for a six-game series. And the Royals, despite being 9-4, usually in the American League Central, you'd be in the lead. But the Guardians are 9-3. The Tigers are right there at 7-4. Maybe this division is better than we think. But they take on the White Sox. So they got the Mets next. The Mets are 5-7. They got 3 in New York. Then they got 3 in Chicago against the White Sox. So they just swept a 4-game series. And the White Sox are 2-10. So should we just go ahead and call it 13-game winning streak after these two series?
Yeah.
Just a 13-game winning streak. Now we can get cocky and it'll be a 13-game winning streak for the Royals. The boys in blue will have a 13-game winning streak after these next two series against really bad baseball teams. You know, somebody told me, well, yeah, the Royals have a good start, but they haven't beat anybody good. And I said, well, I'll listen to that a little bit. I mean, the Twins, they lost 2 out of 3, and the Twins are off to a slow start. They lost 2 out of 3 to Baltimore. They're a good team. They beat White Sox 4 games, and they're bad. They beat the Astros 3 straight. The Astros are not bad. They're just not playing well now. Okay, I think they're still good. They're just not playing well right now. But I hear that argument. I'll listen to it. They got the Mets and then the White Sox. But I said, you know, a sign of a good team is a team that beats the bad teams.
Yeah.
The good teams should feast on the bad teams. You shouldn't be losing to those teams. And the Royals are beating those teams. And then if they could win the next 6 and have a 13-game winning streak, they'd come back home and they'd host the Orioles and the Blue Jays. Now, that gets to a little bit tougher part of the schedule, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
But the next 6, and we talked about it, 25 of the first 38 games against playoff teams from a year ago, if they could get through the 38-game stretch around 500, that'd be great. They're 5 over now with 6 somewhat easy games, it appears. You know, go 4-2. Yeah, 4-2 is pretty good in a road trip. Go 4-2, take 2 out of 3 in each series. Go 4-2, you're 13-6, and you're halfway through that tough stretch to start the year. That's pretty doggone impressive.
Yeah,
folks, jump aboard the Royals Express on the Royals bus trip Sunday, May 5th. Yeah, I'm a shill. Yep, you want to join us? Give me a call, 545-3220. Dusty, I'll give you information, how much it'll cost, what it all includes, when we leave, when we get back. You'll have a great time. I can pretty much guarantee it, unless you're not a Royals fan. If you're a Rangers fan and want to go, that's fine, too. Defending World Series champion Rangers.
You will take some heat.
You will.
Just ask the A's fans that were on the bus 1 year.
And the Yankee fans. Brian Koster, we're talking about you, but his money still cleared the bank, so we took it. We absolutely took it. But anyway, May 5th is the Royals bus trip. Rangers and the Royals at the K. So if you'd like to go, give us a call. We'll give you the details, 545-3220. Coming up, an update on the Masters. Kentucky's got their man, or really they don't, but they settle. We'll explain how settling might not be a bad thing for Kentucky. A former KU Jayhawk is in big trouble with the law. and the NBA regular season winding down, getting ready for the play-in tournament. So we get college basketball out of the way. Now we can focus on professional basketball in case you care about that. Local sports, we hand it off to Dusty.
Yeah, there was a bit of activity yesterday. The first St. Greens golf meet was held yesterday in the area at St. John's Invitational in Glasgow. Team-wise, Lakeside, the champions, with a 312 score, first place by 40 points ahead of St. John's, and second at 352. Lakeside, the three-time defending state champions, off to a good start here in the Sand Green season this year. And the defending state champion individually from last year was Jace Cunningham, and he's off to a good start as he shot a 69 and took first place there in Glasgow on Thursday. Christopher LaRocque of St. John's was second place, 75. Elijah Field, Pike Valley third, and Lakeside's Ian Christina Jackson Hardy rounded out the top five from the area. Full results for all these events can be found at ncksports.com. In high school softball yesterday, Sylvan Lucas getting a sweep over Plainville, taking the first game 5-4, and they won the second game 5-0 over Plainville. And then Concordia winning over Republic County in a doubleheader sweep there, 10-0 and 6 in the first game, and taking the second game, Concordia did 14-12. Track and field from the area, the Delwicks Invitational in Deschler, Nebraska. Rock Hills was competing there. Bethany Simmelink bringing home two gold medals in the 100-meter and 200-meter dash on the girls' side for Rock Hills. Boys' gold medal winners for the Grizzlies included Isaiah Ridgeway in the 100-meter dash, Cooper McDill in the 800-meter run. Both the 4x1 and 4x800-meter relay teams took first, and Nate Myers took first in the long jump for the Grizzlies there in Deschler on Thursday. Again, full results in ncksports.com. That leads us into today's schedule, where Concordia will be at Beloit today at 4:30 this afternoon in baseball.
I'm pretty sure that's 4 o'clock.
Is it at 4? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. The original schedules I had said 4:30, so I'll change that to 4 o'clock.
Yeah, I'll double check, but I'm 99% sure it's 4 o'clock.
Okay. So we'll plan on 4 o'clock for Beloit hosting Concordia today, unless Wade tells me anything different. But Beloit hosting Concordia here today. The softball team is out in the Kansas City area this weekend. They're playing Shawnee Mission Northwest today at 3:30 at their place, the Sunflower League Festival. So again, Beloit at Shawnee Mission Northwest today. And then tomorrow they'll be taking on Olathe East out there at Olathe East tomorrow morning. I believe 9 o'clock is what the schedule I had said for the Beloit girls tomorrow morning. So that's a look at what's coming up tomorrow there for Beloit. And then today, Hill City Track and Field Invitational, St. John's Smith Center, Thunder Ridge competing from the area at 3 o'clock, and then Smoky Valley Invitational, Concordia is competing there at 4 o'clock this afternoon.
Yes, it is 4 o'clock for 4 baseball, o'clock. Okay. Concordia and Beloit.
We will change that on ncksports.com.
We just don't want
them
to be a half hour late.
Absolutely. I understand that for sure. So, 4 o'clock this afternoon, Concordia at Beloit. That's a makeup from what was supposed to take place in the first, in late March, actually. So, other things locally, Cloud County Thunderbird All-Star Game tomorrow, or Sunday, actually, with area participants. The girls game at 1, boys at 2:30 at Arleigh Bryant Gymnasium. Peyton Remus of Beloit is competing there from the area. And then Dakota Kattenberg of Smith Center, Aubrey Gingler and Jenna Gingler of St. John's, Cameron Ritschke of Thunder Ridge. And in the boys' game, from the area, Bryce Beisner and Quinn Eilert of Beloit. And then Peyton Brees, Joey Henderson, and Jonathan Turner from Concordia competing from area squads there in Concordia on Sunday.
Oh, man, I can't resist. I can't resist. Dusty knows what I'm about to say. So the Cloud County All-Star Basketball game is very odd. And they've been odd for a while. But anyway, usually when you have an all-star game, you have 10 or 12 kids on each roster. They have 8 for one boys team, 7 for another, and 7 on each of the girls' rosters, mm-hmm. which is very weird. I've been explained by somebody, not there, that there was lots of conflicts with proms and stuff. Highland just had their all-star games. They had, I believe, 12 on each team. And then you have multiple kids already played in that game, some further that way, mm-hmm. that are coming all the way to Cloud to play in an all-star game, which is fine. You know, you can. There's no law that says you can't play in more than one all-star game. Colby has an all-star game, too. I still think Colby does the best job. And I was a part of it years ago. They did a great job. It was organized. They promoted it. The all-star games that these colleges do nowadays, it's pretty much a money grab. It's a fundraiser. It's what it is. It's a fundraiser. You're paying to play. I mean, unless they don't have you sell sponsorships, then you're not. But if you are having to, if you're going to play and you get selected, I was told by a parent of a kid that was at the Highland All-Star game that he was notified the week of the game that he was picked, which great planning. It's going to the mom. And that he had about 48 hours to sell two sponsorships. So he did. And when they checked in, his mom and his dad checking him in for the All-Star game on that particular weekend, the first question they asked, according to her, was, where's your sponsorship money? Or did you pay it? We're like, did you turn it in? Mm-hmm. And she said, yes, we did. We already gave that, wrote a check. It's taken care of. And they're like, they questioned it because they didn't have it down that they had been paid. Like, he wasn't going to be allowed to play because he didn't get the sponsorship money turned in. And the dad had to show, like, he had proof on his phone he did.
Mm-hmm.
Not like, hey, congratulations, great to have you here. Hey, by the way, just to double check, did you turn in that sponsorship money? That, according to the mom. Now, maybe that's not fully accurate. I don't know, but I trust this lady. She's pretty accurate what she mm-hmm. says. So I know a radio station that didn't know as of Wednesday of the week of the game what the rosters were. What the hell are you doing? Like, what's the point of having the games? Well, the point is, apparently, don't turn this stuff out to the media. Don't promote your games, which is stupid, because you promote your games, you get more people maybe to come. They pay at the gate, thus you make more money, and that's the whole point of the All-Star Games in the first place. And if you want to sit here and say, well, the whole point of the All-Star Games is to recognize these kids for their great, great play, then don't make them sell sponsorships.
Yeah.
So it's a fundraiser. That's the only way to explain it. It is an absolute fundraiser. Now, having said that, kids obviously like to play on college courts. They like to get the recognition. Why wouldn't you? You earned it. You deserve it. You get invited. You're flattered. I know when I was invited to play way back in the day before they had indoor plumbing that I was flattered, and it was really cool. I didn't even care how many points I was going to score. I just wanted to play some, and I got to play against guys that were my rivals, that were on my own team. I remember Matt Fisher of Norton was on my team. There was a kid from, I think it was Vance Robinson of Hill City was on my team. It was cool to play with guys on my team instead of going up against them, right? And it was a cool experience. And it was a one-day thing. Went out to Colby. I think we had like a team meal at Village Inn. That was really neat. They organized that. And I think we had some kind of makeshift little practice or whatever. And then we had the games, I think, late afternoon or in the evening. And I gave up my prom for it. And it was fun because prom, I was like, fine, I'll miss prom. Guys don't care so much about the prom. I wanted after prom. I got back in time for after prom. And all the guy friends that I had that were at prom said, dear Lord, I'd rather been at a basketball game. I'd rather been watching you play, let alone play. Because they said prom was so, and they were like, after prom is where it's at. So I got the best of both worlds. So this leads me into something that you may say, okay, well, first of all, congratulations to the kids that were selected. They all deserve it. Very cool. All right. There is a player that lives 30 miles away from Concordia that has two teammates on the All-Star roster that was also a senior, who was also a big part of a team getting third place at state, number one team pretty much all year in 3A, who was also a first-team All-Leaguer, who is also honorable mention All-State. Never contacted. You know who the source is? Me. My son. Now, I don't bring this up to act like one of those parents that thinks their kid is entitled. I told Dusty the other day, Dusty, what did you think when you first saw the roster? I didn't even talk to Dusty.
Because you weren't even here.
Right.
I looked at the roster. I was like, why is Noah not playing in this game?
Yeah. That was my first question.
Like, where's Noah Gerstner on this list of people that are playing in this All-Star game? That was the first thing that came to my mind. And that, again, it wasn't a slight to the people that are actually on the roster. It's just like, there's seven kids here. Why is Noah not on here?
There's eight, actually. But
on his team, there's eight.
There's seven on the other. Yeah,
yeah, most the as I looked at them, they all looked like they had seven.
Right.
But, yeah.
Two Beloit, three Clifton Clyde, three Concordia. I get the Concordia tie-in.
Yeah,
Clifton Clyde's nearby. Beloit's also nearby. So you had two. Why couldn't you just had three? So anyway, you saw this, and your first reaction was what?
That was exactly what I said.
You were like, how is Noah not on it?
Yeah.
And so then I thought, well, maybe my son didn't communicate with me. He was asked, and maybe he turned it down. I highly doubted he would, but maybe. I asked him. He said, no. I said, wow. Listen, if you've left out somebody within 30 miles that was all league on a team that was number one pretty much all year and went to state. And he and his teammates all had great years. And two of them are on the team, and the third one isn't. Listen, now my son is way better than I am as a person. I'm just going to say this right now, okay? If that were me, if I were my son, I'd be pissed off. Now, I think my son's probably a little disappointed. He hasn't said he's disappointed, but I think I can tell.
Yeah.
Okay, why wouldn't you be? He would have been flattered to play. And here's the thing. I wasn't really too worried about it until I saw a post by a dad on Facebook. Can't wait to see my kid play one final time. And that's when I got pissed off. Because I call the games. It was four or five times this year I did not call the game so I could enjoy it as a parent. And you can easily come back on me and say, listen, you might have been able to get out of a few other games possibly, and you could have watched a few more games as a parent. Maybe a couple. That would be about it. I have a job, and that is my job, to call games. Dusty calls games so we can cover as many teams as possible. I'm not complaining about calling the games of my kid and my kid's team. Enjoyed all of it. So that don't misconstrue what I'm trying to say. But this, what really sunk in, I wish I never saw this parent's comment. Because once I saw that comment, it ticked me off. Because then I'm like, you know what? Selfishly, in my case, I could have been a parent one last time and watch my kid play because I didn't have nearly as many opportunities as a lot of other people because I was in the role of a radio broadcaster, which is a unique situation to be in. Now, nobody at these All-Star Games knows my situation, nor do I care if they know my situation. It ain't about me, but I'm just saying, for me, I'm just sharing my emotions and feelings right now that why is my son left out? Is it because he's not a big enough name? Is it because somebody doesn't like me? Is it? I start to wonder because it makes no sense. You can't sit here and say, well, we didn't have enough room. Well, that's BS. You have plenty of room. Well, there was a whole bunch of proms going on. So Beloit doesn't have prom this week. And you have two kids that are on the team that are from Beloit. So this isn't the first time my son, I think, has, you know, maybe, you know, not the first time something like this has kind of happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it is what it is. But I wouldn't bring this up on the radio if I wasn't passionate enough about basketball. Secondly, very proud of my son. And three, he's deserving. If he was not deserving, I would not even bring this up today.
No.
But he is. I know he is. And I know he's done just as much as half the kids on those teams. At least. Okay? He, Quinn, and Bryce sacrificed numbers for the betterment of the team.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, if you put Quinn and Noah and Bryce, and you put those three kids on some of the teams that have kids on these teams that were 500 or, you know, were okay, or maybe a smaller classification, their numbers would be bigger. They would have shot more threes. They would have taken more shots. They would have got more free throw opportunities. They had more rebounds. I mean, Bryce would have averaged a double-double for a lot of teams, 20 and 10, sacrifice some of that, okay? Because he had a good team around him, had Eli take some rebounds, right? Mm-hmm. That's Eli's selfishness of grabbing rebound after rebound took away from Bryce. I'm joking. That's a joke. Please stop. It's a joke. You know, Bryce being so good inside, there's times Bryce got double teamed and still was able to score. Most teams don't have a big that talented would do what? They'd kick it out and Noah, Jackson, and Quinn would get more shots. But you know what? I don't blame Bryce for not kicking it out because he usually scored even though he was double teamed. Mm-hmm. And the goal of the game is to score. So I told my son, I averaged 19 points a game my junior year and we went 8-11. I was all league my junior year. Now you're sitting there going, well, wait a minute. Why are you talking about yourself, Wade? To give you an idea. So my junior year, I was all league. I averaged 19 points a game. We were 8-11. I've told my son this the last couple of years. I said I would have been happy to average 9 or 10 a game, cut my production in half, and be number one in the state and go to state and get third place and play in Hutch. Because that's where we would have made it at Waukenny. We were 3A. Mm-hmm. We would have played in Hutch. I've told my son I would have loved to have averaged 10 a game, like my son did, and sacrificed numbers to have a great team and have that tremendous run to where we were very close to winning a state title. How cool is that? Lots of teams would give their you-know-what right arm to have that opportunity. And then there are kids that all are about themselves. All they want is their numbers. So they wouldn't fit with teams that have to sacrifice like Beloit. And other good teams have too. It's not just Beloit. Okay, all your teams that make it to state usually have kids that sacrifice. I guarantee you Willie Dorsey of Wellsville, he averaged 13 a game. Had he been on a team that wasn't as good, he would have averaged 20. But on Wellsville, he only had averaged 12 or 13. KU's best team, the team that won it in 08, the leading scorer averaged 13 a game. Because everybody could average double figures. And Bill Self was asked, who's the go-to man? He said, it's the open man. You know what? For Beloit, it kind of was that way too. And for other teams. And so I've told my son numerous times, I would have loved to have traded my individual stats to have the opportunity that you did. And I live vicariously through you by being at state and getting to watch you play. And on top of that, there was video streaming. There was live video to watch. There was radio stations covering it. Way more media to cover it. There's previews, and your name is in these papers and these previews. And I said, I never had that. So yeah, hell yeah, I'm jealous. I've told him this many times. He goes, Dad, you tell me this all the time. I'm like, it's true. I'm jealous. I'm jealous that you have this opportunity, but I'm tickled pink, as my mother-in-law would like to say, one of her favorite phrases. I'm tickled pink that you get to do this. This is awesome. Having said that, I would imagine there are kids that have been on really good teams when their careers are over that may go, what would I have put up had I been on a team that was 8-11 like Wade was his junior year? Would I put up 19? Would I put up 20? Would I have hit 93 pointers? Would I have had, would I average a double-double, 21 and 10 instead of 16 and 8? You know, you'll never know either way. So what's more important to you, individual glory in stats or team success? Here's why I'm a little bit miffed by this. All-star teams are typically based off of, and teams that were very successful, they're rewarded for their success. Thus, they get about as many people as they possibly can on these all-star teams. I would maybe understand it if Beloit was 8-13 this year. They were number one in the state. They were third. They went 24-2. So, listen, I'm saying this, and I've said this before. I've talked about different people. So if somebody wants to sit here and say, wait a minute, you're talking about your son, Wade, how convenient that is. It happens to me, my son. I've gone to bat, and I've talked about it during the Republic County Beloit basketball broadcast. Dusty knows this, that Avery Stent not being first team all-league last year was a load of crap. Okay? And whether she's a great kid or a bad kid, statistically and the way she played, she was one of the best 10 players in the league last year. Now guess what? Now she suddenly is this year. But she was last year. But because her team didn't win, I think she was punished. I've heard through the grapevine that, you know, maybe certain people didn't like her for some reason. I don't know why. I don't understand. I don't care. And it shouldn't matter. Shouldn't matter if you don't like the kid. Really shouldn't. Is that kid deserving? And Avery Stent, who I have no relation to whatsoever, I vouch for her. Never met her, never talked to her, but I've seen her play basketball. And when she's played Beloit, the times that Republic County's played Beloit the last couple of years, she's been the best player on the floor many times, and at least the second best player on the floor. With not a lot of talent around her, no offense to people, but not basketball talent. If you put her on a team,
when you look at what their record has been,
you put her on a really good team, imagine. Yeah. But she'll probably lose a little bit of points per game. But next thing you know, she's automatic all-leaguer. So just because I'm talking about my son, who I'm sure hates that I would be talking about this right now, but you know what? It's my platform. I have a microphone, and I don't like to, but I am not scared to point out things that are wrong or mystifying or don't make sense. I'm not afraid to address those things, whether it's my kid or not. And if somebody has a problem with it, well, that's your problem. Okay, but kids sometimes, you know, it is a lesson in life. You don't always get what you want. And if this is the worst thing that happens to you, it's no big deal. And like I told Dusty yesterday, my kid hurt himself in baseball last week. It might be a blessing in disguise that he was omitted, left off, nobody vouched for him, and he didn't make the team. It might be a blessing because then, you know, who knows? He might have played and ripped up his knee because he wasn't 100%, hadn't played basketball, not in basketball shape. So I think the thing that really bothers me the most is two things. One, the experience he could have had. I'm not really worried about what he did on the floor. I'm just like, he could have had a cool little experience. Okay, he was left off. Why, I don't know. Somebody obviously dropped the ball and didn't do any homework or research. And then second is, for me selfishly, And for my family, we would have had one more shot to watch him play. Mm-hmm. Just as a family, it's loosey-goosey. All-star games are loosey-goosey. And by the way, it would be cool, and this is nothing against any coaching staffs, okay? But when you play high school ball for a coach 1 year or 4 years, there's structure, right? Like, there's certain shots you're not supposed to take. An all-star game, you know what? You might be able to chuck that 30-footer and play Caitlin Clark and make it. But in a regular game with your high school program, you're going to the bench, or you're going to get yelled at if you do that.
Yeah.
So there's way more freedom when you're in an all-star game. Nobody's going to get chewing you out because you did this or that. It's an all-star game. I mean, the coaches are there just to kind of stand there, you know? So that's my soapbox. That's my 2 cents. You know, if you don't like it, you know, too bad. but I've told my son this many times before, and I'm probably sharing way too much information, but I will go to bat for my kids. I will go to bat for my family, especially when I know they're in the right, or if something is, you know, not right. And if, like I said, this is the worst thing I have to bring up, then boy, it's going to be a great life for my son and everything else. But it is crazy that, like I said, your first reaction, I wasn't even here. I've had 3 or 4 people text me asking, why is he not playing in the game? And they just assume he turned it down or had some conflict. Mm-hmm. And I said he wasn't asked. And the reaction I get is, what the hell? Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing.
That's not a... Yeah, we both come on here multiple times with, you know, when All League comes out and kind of looking at what's wrong with this, or another all-star roster comes out. It's like, well, why wasn't this person advised?
Politics do get involved in that. We've seen that for years.
That I've known ever since I moved here, he's a little, he might have not even been born. I can't remember when he was born, but when I moved here, he was very, very little, right? And I've known him my whole life. Mm-hmm. And I think this was probably 5-6 years ago. Led 8-man football in tackles with like nobody close to him, and did not get invited to play in the 8-man all-star game.
That's ridiculous.
And I was like, and he actually sent me a message. He's like, do you know why I wasn't? Like, who can I contact and ask why?
Yeah.
He's like, I'm not. Well, he's probably mad.
But he would like an explanation.
Like, I just want to know why.
Yeah, an explanation.
And I was like, dude, I gave him a person that he could talk to. And I told him, I was like, it's ridiculous that you're not on this team. I was like, I don't understand it either. It doesn't make sense because I've talked to your coach and he nominated you. And so it's like, I don't know what the deal is. I have no idea how you did not make the All-Star team. And so, we talked about this person at the time, and I'm not going to bring it up now because it's just, you know, it's old news now. But it's like, I felt for him because he deserved that shot. He deserved that chance to be part of the 80 kids that are coming to Beloit every summer.
Right.
And so that was an example of somebody that clearly should have been in there. And I fielded a lot of questions why he was not part of the all-star teams, because people just talk to me about it because we cover the games, right? And we have a very big presence at those games. And so I was like, I can't answer the question. I said, I'm not we cover it. We don't put the rosters together. And
I've been asked by other parents, even from outside our area, that, you know, they go to the 8manallstars.com website. They send an email to me or to us, and I don't even know anything about the kid. And they're like, well, how do they pick these teams? And how did this kid get on there? And my kid was left off. And it's like, I don't know. You have to talk to somebody else. But, and then I look at him like, oh, you're probably right. You should be on there.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's been multiple times where we see this, and you got to sometimes call it out and see, like, well, what happened here? Why is this happening? We had an all-league team 1 year where a kid led it was when the Pike Trail League was still the thing, led the league in interceptions, didn't even make the team. And I find out through the grapevine that some of those kids on that team didn't get voted for because they didn't like the way their coach coached.
That's got nothing to do with the kid.
There's
like the political part.
And I heard that from multiple people telling me that about the kids that didn't make it from that team to the all-league team that year. And it's like, come on. You don't punish the kids for the way you feel about the coach and the way you got beat by 50 every game.
Yeah.
Or that you didn't get beat. What is that teaching anybody by doing that? It teaches that you're petty and you can't get around things and can't honor kids that have earned the things that they should be earning and getting.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it's a deal that happens all the time. It's unfortunate for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, you want an explanation. I had one, a text here goes, but those people can't get in the business of explaining how they pick teams. No one will be happy. And that's true. Some people will actually appreciate explanation, and it will make sense, and they might take it like that. But then sometimes people want explanation. No matter what the explanation is, they're going to be even more mad about the explanation. And I have to admit, in this situation, I don't even want an explanation. I'm just mystified. It's mystifying to me. And like we said, it's not the first time this has happened. And if it's the worst thing that happens in our family's life, then boy, we are really, really blessed. And as, you know, put a positive spin on it here. Hey, listen, we got a Sunday free of sports for once. Well, my family has a free Sunday where we don't have to do anything tied to baseball or basketball or football or whatever it is. So we get a rare Sunday to do what we need to do. And like I said, my son kind of hurt himself in baseball last week, so maybe it's a blessing that he's not going to be playing, so forth and so on. And like I said, I wasn't really too riled up about it until I saw that comment on Facebook from a dad. And it's not that person's fault.
No,
it's
just, absolutely.
It just all of a sudden hit home with me, like, you know, son of a buck.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we got athlete of the week. Yeah. We are recognizing people that are deserving, and I'm going to tell you right now, Lauren Brummett's deserved.
Yeah, the Lakeside Senior Lauren Brummett, the NCKSports.com Cunningham Fiber Athlete of the Week.
Fiber. And, yep, it sounds
we're
weird
changing
when you say
it,
that.
Man.
Yeah.
And after successful seasons in the fall in volleyball, winter in basketball, she's off to a very good start here in the spring in track and field. Lauren is on Tuesday at the Stockton Invitational. 2 gold medals. She won the javelin with a throw of 110.6 and the high jump at 5'2¼". Coming into the 2024 season, Brummett had a career best of 5'2" and was one of 6 athletes in Lakeside girls history who had reached that mark for the school record, but her jump of 5'2¼" is now standing alone as the new school record for the Knights and a personal best for Brummett. She also took third place in the discus there in Stockton on Tuesday. Again, Lauren Brummett, the athlete of the week. You can read more at ncksports.com.
Our Republic County, I mentioned them a little bit earlier, Republic County girls and boys have openings for their basketball teams. They had really rough years. The girls have lost like 50-some in a row. Well, they've got a boys head coach, and apparently nobody else wants the job, and Alan Sheets is back. Honestly, that's probably what's happening here. And Alan Sheets is a heck of a coach. Alan Sheets takes back over as a Republic County boys basketball head coach. He comes back to coaching with an overall record of 451-194. That's pretty good. 11 trips to state, a fourth place, third place, second place, and he won a state championship as well between his tenures with the girls and the guys at Republic County. So he'll be the new boys head basketball coach at Republic County. Justin Steinbrock has resigned as a Clifton Clyde boys head basketball coach. That was made official here yesterday. Steinbrock ends his career with a record of 57-14, 2 trips to state, and 2 Twin Valley League titles. But he is not retiring from coaching because he's coaching the Cloud All-Star team that my kid isn't on. But I'm not blaming him. That's interesting. Obviously, Justin Steinbrock, Clifton Clyde boys have been very good. Republic County has been, you know, obviously not very good. So there's 2 changes in a close proximity there on the boys' side.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. And I don't know
Who Clifton Clyde
I don't follow Clifton Clyde,
I think
all the
Danny
time,
Hurley. I think Danny Hurley, maybe even Scott Drew might be interested in that.
Yeah, and I don't know what the future looks like for the boys' basketball team there. But, man, they've always got athletes there for sure. So I would think whoever does take that job and get that job would have something to work with. I know they've got a lot of seniors that have graduated over the last couple of years that have led them to some really good things, but it'll be interesting to see how that plays out for sure.
All right, in 30 seconds, we will give you an update on the Masters.
I'm Elijah at Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Did you know that we sell tires? We also perform alignments and all the other services that go along with them. We handle all the top brands, extras like road hazard warranty, complimentary tire rotations, and complimentary tire repairs are available for purchase on most tires. Right now, we are offering $80 off when you buy a set of 4. Call or stop by Kiever Brothers Automotive for fast, friendly tire services today. Find us just south of the courthouse in Beloit or on the web at KeeverBrothers.com.
Masters underway in Augusta, Georgia. Welcome back to the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. Round one was suspended due to darkness. Bryson DeChambeau got his full round in. He has a 1-stroke lead at 7-under. Ahead of second place Scotty Scheffler, the number one golfer in the world. He's the hottest golfer now. He's at 6-under. Multiple well-named knowns are tied for 17th, including Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy at 1-under. First round finished up this morning. Round two is already underway, I believe, now, after a few holes. And we can tell you DeChambeau will tee off at 10:54. I don't know if that's Eastern or Central. I have in front of me. He's 7 under. Scheffler 6 under. So two Americans at the top, and then Hogard. He is tied for third along with Max Homa. They're both 5 under. And the rest of the leaderboard, you can check out Masters.com or just search on Google Masters Tournament, Masters Leaderboard, like I did. But wouldn't that be something if Tiger Woods could make the cut and be in contention? 1 under his first round, and boy, I guarantee you CBS is going, please let Tiger find his old ways, because we can't latch on to any new golfers. And you get this thing, like, it's Tiger's going to be 65, and they're going to be like, we got to have Tiger be in contention. Like, is there nobody else to take the baton? There are, but as we talked about, the golf doesn't do a great
Scotty
job.
Scotty Scheffler looks like he's doing pretty good. Maybe you should talk about him.
But he's not a personality. Like, he's not. He's not that guy that drives people to want to watch golf. He's not flashy. He's just great.
Well, and that's the problem, I think, with all these guys.
Yes.
Brooks Koepka wasn't that until he got into a tiff with Bryson DeChambeau, and there's something you could run with there, right?
Like, and
have
they tried
fun
for a little while
with this rivalry.
They tried.
And yeah, and that's what I said. The fact that both of them left the PGA and went to live to be in the same spot, and they don't even like each other, like that to tell you where golf's at.
Money's worth more than worrying
absolutely
about
it is.
You don't like, you know. Speaking of money, Kentucky is set to hire BYU coach Mark Pope to become its next men's basketball coach. The two sides quickly engaged yesterday afternoon, and the hours after, Baylor's Scott Drew and UConn's Dan Hurley both turned Kentucky down. Pope is a Kentucky alum. I'm so old, I remember when he played. He played on that championship team in 95/96. He has long coveted an opportunity to one day return to his alma mater. He has 9 years of head coaching experience in D1, 4 at Utah Valley, the past 5 at BYU. His career record is 187-108. His mark at BYU, 110-52. He's 0-2 all-time in the NCAA tournament. He guided the Cougars to a number 6 seed in this year's NCAA tournament, but fell in the first round to Duquesne. Pope won out over other hot names, including Billy Donovan and Rick Pitino. Sources say that despite Pitino and Donovan being buzzy names attached to Kentucky as potential candidates, neither were aggressively pursued by Kentucky Athletic Director Mitch Barnhart. The event that opened the door all the way for Pope was when Hurley definitely signaled he wasn't an option. Of course, Kentucky fans are freaking out, which I think is hilarious. And they're like, oh, my God, we're knocking Calipari because he can't win in the first round. We just hired a guy that's never won an NCAA tournament game, which I do think is funny.
Yeah.
But Seth Davis has an interesting tweet. I don't always agree with Seth Davis. Seth Davis, the guy that picks all the double-digit seeds to advance to the Sweet 16. But anyway, Seth Davis makes some good points sometimes. And this one I think's good. He says, the year before he was hired at Duke, Coach K went 9-17 at Army. Think about that. He was 9-17, was hired by Duke, and left Army. It worked out. He was not Duke's first choice. Roy Williams was the third assistant at North Carolina. He was not KU's first choice when Larry Brown left for the Spurs. And he was hired by Kansas. How'd that turn out? Pretty good.
It went pretty good for him.
Pretty well. Tom Izzo had never been a head coach before he was hired at Michigan State. How'd that turn out?
Pretty dang good.
Jay Wright never won a tourney game at Hofstra.
Mm-hmm.
He won 2 championships at Villanova and multiple Final Fours. So Seth Davis says, carry on, Big Blue Nation. Sometimes the obvious number one choice, when it falls through, then you scramble. Sometimes that third, fourth, fifth, or sixth choice could end up being the diamond in the rough and ends up being the perfect choice. Roy Williams, people are like, how can you win a national championship after 1988, Danny and the Miracles? Larry Brown goes to the NBA. How in the world can you hire a guy with no head coaching experience to be the next head coach at Kansas? Dean Smith vouched for him. Worked out pretty well. Sometimes the number one choice is obvious and it works out well. I remember when Roy Williams left Kansas, we did the show up in Seneca at the time, and I immediately said, this is a no-brainer. You give Bill Self whatever he wants, and he comes, because I knew he'd been a grad assistant at KU.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? That's worked out pretty well. Sometimes it's obvious. You get the guy. You roll with it. Okay, Kentucky went and got Calipari from Memphis. It was obvious. He was the hot commodity, and that worked out, I would say, pretty well over the course of time with Calipari in Kentucky. Nebraska went to like their 18th choice and Bill Callahan. That didn't work out so well.
No.
But you know what? They got their obvious number one choice, Scott Frost. That didn't work out any better. In fact, worse than Callahan, you could argue.
And I would say most people thought it was
slam dunk,
going to be turned around pretty quick at Nebraska.
I was wrong.
Both of us were wrong.
I was super confident Scott Frost was going to get it done.
Wow.
I was still confident after a couple of years.
Yeah. And then, boom, it just falls apart.
Couldn't win close games. So sometimes the first choice is maybe obvious, but not the right fit, or you're lucky it isn't the right fit.
Well, sometimes the first choice is obviously not the right fit.
Yeah.
Like, we could talk about maybe it's not obvious, but maybe it is obvious, and then it just doesn't work out. Sometimes Charlie Weiss is the number one choice, and it's pretty obvious that he should not have been hired, right? Like, everybody, like, what are you doing, dude? Like, everybody on the outside is like, what are you doing?
Shane
but it was clear that that was who he was going after from the get-go.
Right.
And it's like, what are you doing here, man?
Well, just look at K-State football.
Yeah.
Chris Klieman was not even close to the first choice.
No.
Not by K-State
It might have been
fans.
For Gene Taylor, but it wasn't for K-State fans,
it
that's
was
for sure.
Seth Luttrell, who has not done well since. Yeah. Brent Venables.
It's always Brent Venables.
And there's
not anymore, probably, since he finally got a job.
Right. But there's a few other names that are out there that were highly thought of ahead of Chris Klieman. I'd say that worked out pretty good. Kansas had other bigger names on their list ahead of Lance Leipold, and I'd say that's worked out pretty well. So sometimes you may sit here. Look, it's pretty easy to sit here and go, you helped push Calipari out the door, or made him so unhappy he's leaving. You boosters, your alums, and all this stuff, because he got bounced in the tournament two of the last 3 years in the first round, and you just hired a guy to replace him as a worse overall record, worse winning percentage, hasn't been at this level of basketball. BYU is nothing like Kentucky. He got him to a whopping 6 seed this year in the NCAA tournament, lost to the 11, and has never won a tournament game. This is who we're getting to replace Calipari? It does look bad on paper. Not going to deny that. However, Mark Pope is a Kentucky alum, which, of course, Scott Frost didn't work out well as a Nebraska alum. Sometimes the alum angle works, sometimes it doesn't. But Mark Pope is super excited. He is going to bust his butt and do everything he can. And here's the one thing Kentucky can say. If it works out with Mark Pope, they will not have to find a coach for a very long time, because this is his job. He's not going anywhere. Now, people thought Calipari was going nowhere except maybe back to the NBA. And they were shocked he went to Arkansas. Well, when you upset him so much, him and his family, and you turned on him like some of these people did, he eventually said, I'm going to take a little less to go somewhere where I'm appreciated and wanted, and I'm excited about a new opportunity. And sometimes that's what you need in life, is a new opportunity, a new challenge. And so be careful what you wish for. Part of me hopes this falls apart and Kentucky is really ruining the day when they got rid of Calipari, because I'd say, see, you got what you wanted, and guess what? Didn't work out so well.
Mm-hmm.
Be careful what you wish for. Part of me is really hoping it works out well, because it's fun to tell people that think they know everything that they're dead wrong. And Mark Pope seems like a good dude. I mean, I think it'd be great if he does very well at Kentucky. Now, not against Kansas or Kansas State, but he can do well against anybody else. That's fine.
Yeah, I have no one way or the other, but it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But it would be fun to see. I think it's always fun to see people like that are just kind of shrugged off or pushed to the side and said, no, this isn't the guy you want. And then they come out and have success and kind of prove everybody wrong. That's always fun to watch, no matter where they're at. So that would be fun. But like you said, I don't think a lot of people are just going to start cheering for Kentucky just because they want this guy to do good.
No. And he's a Kentucky alum. And he won a championship as a player, so he knows the championship pedigree. He will not have he will more than likely not have as good a recruiting class as John Calipari. And by the way, he's taking his assistants from Kentucky to Arkansas as well, so there'll be cohesion there. That's big. By the way, back to the Royals real quick. I failed to mention this. The Royals, they're playing the Mets at Shea Stadium. It's their first trip back to Shea Stadium since they won the World Series in 15.
Nice.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Mad dash home by Hosmer, and Matt Harvey left in too long, and the Royals broke it open and won and didn't have to go back to game 6 and 7 at home against the two best pitchers for the Mets. I remember being nervous about that at that time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we talk about Rashee Rice. He has been arrested, or he's turned himself in, if you didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Got all these charges against him. We'll see what happens. We'll see if he gets a slap on the wrist, if he gets fined, if he gets suspended by the NFL. He has to serve jail time. We do not know. And if you're wondering what we think about the whole situation, go to our podcast, Sports Ticket, on kdcountry94.com. Listen to Sports Ticket podcast yesterday, and you'll know exactly what we think about the whole Rashee Rice situation and the double standard that exists with professional athletes and celebrities and coaches. But now we've got another familiar name that's in trouble with the law. By the way, Artira Morris, the rape charges were dropped.
Yeah.
Okay? Illinois has ended their investigation in Terrence Shannon Jr., although he's still going to have a court date or something coming up in May in Lawrence, in case you're following that. Remember Ben McLemore? He was a smooth player, Sweet jump shot, smooth player, very athletic. He was a seventh overall pick in the 2013 NBA draft. He has been arrested in Oregon. Ben McLemore, former Jayhawk, faces multiple sex crime charges. The charges stem from allegations that he sexually assaulted a woman in 2021 while he was a member of the Portland Trailblazers. The arrest was made at Portland International Airport based on outstanding warrants for one charge of first-degree rape, one charge of first-degree unlawful sexual penetration, and two charges of second-degree sexual abuse, according to the police in Lake Oswego, Oregon. McLemore played nine seasons in NBA. He was selected number seven by the Kings in 2013. He went on to play for the Grizzlies, Rockets, Lakers, and finally the Blazers. Of course, some people will say, well, he was a bust, he's a failure, he sucked. No, he made plenty of money and played in the NBA for a while and played overseas, I believe, too. But none of that matters now. And if he was a player right now that was a star NBA player, he would probably have a much better chance of beating this rap. But now that he doesn't play in the league anymore, people kind of forget about him. He's more of a Joe Schmo. He's probably got a less good chance to beat this. I'm not saying he will or he won't. I'm not saying it's a game, win, lose, beat this, lose this. What I'm saying is that there is a double standard we talked about. The superstars are treated differently. The star player on about any team that you can imagine, about any level, is treated differently. Any coach that tells you otherwise is maybe they're being truthful to an extent, but there's a bit of gray there. But Ben McLemore is no longer a top flight player or college athlete, but now he's in trouble with the law. We'll see what happens on that. But bad news for a former Jayhawk.
Yeah, I know a person that got tangled up in that type of deal, and it worked out in his favor in the end. But it's like, yeah, it's just, it's crazy to think of, like we talked about yesterday with the double standard. I think that's the first thing that comes to my mind anytime something like this happens with a basketball player is Kobe, right?
Yeah.
When he had to deal with all that. And then obviously it was pretty clear that he messed up.
Yes.
But he didn't do anything other than in God's eyes and his wife's eyes, right, that was wrong by the end of it. But it's just putting yourself in those situations, and that's where it is for people like Ben McLemore and Kobe Bryant and the guy I know. It's like you're putting yourself in this situation. You got to make sure you're doing the right things when you're that high profile of a person, and you could have something just crumble on you. Mm-hmm. The guy I know never played again in the NBA after it happened to him. Obviously, he was not Kobe Bryant. He was not somebody that was, you know, a stud. But it is, it's interesting to see what you, like, you get caught up in those things, and whether you did the wrong thing or not, sometimes it's going to come back and haunt you, and you're going to have to deal with some stuff you shouldn't. I'm not saying he did or didn't do this, right, Ben McLemore.
Yeah, innocent until guilty.
This does happen, so that's why I'm saying what I'm saying, because he's innocent until he's proven guilty. Mm-hmm. So we don't know the situation in the particulars, but it's obviously a thing that's going to change his life here no matter what. If he did it wrong, if he was in the wrong and did it, or if he didn't, this is now going to change what's going on in his life.
You know, O.J. Simpson died yesterday. You're probably well aware of that. Or died the day before. It was released yesterday. And we were talking about the double standard, about when you have money and power and fame, you get away with stuff. Well, there is a lady that posted on social media. She put her full name out there and everything. She said, now that OJ has died, she can now talk about this. She had signed a piece of paper when she was getting into law school, or we're going to be a lawyer. And she was at USC. She was a law student at USC, I believe. And she was in with basically her mentor, professor, lawyer, whoever. And she was basically forced to sign a letter to not say anything about this. But now that he's died, she can say whatever she wants. According to her, OJ, of course, was a cat's meow. He was the big man on campus at USC. He was a star even then. And apparently, according to her story, he beat and battered two white women. So there was stuff way before whatever Nicole Brown Simpson.
Absolutely.
And everybody knew this already.
Yeah.
But he did this, and his representation, including the Kardashian guy, went in, wrote a big check, said, we'll give you this money, but you have to sign this, and nobody says a word about it. And that's what happened.
Yeah.
Now he died. She can come out and say that. Some people will say, I'm from O.J. Simpson's camp, which are not many. Well, she just could easily make this up. Nah, I think it was pretty detailed. So
there are enough detailed 911 calls before Nicole died that can tell you that this is probably not made up.
Yes, and he probably did it to other women that we don't even know about.
Yeah.
So that's why a lot of people aren't exactly mourning the loss. Can we say that? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the point is, if he were a regular person, he would have never been out of jail as long as he ever was.
No.
He would have been in deep, deep trouble. But because he was important to the university and he can make them money, and this is back in, what, the 60s and 70s, this happened 50 years ago. I guarantee you this happens every single day in society. It happens with your law enforcement. I'm not saying our local law enforcement, but I'm saying it happens. I'm just in a vague term here. It's documented that law enforcement's been paid off to protect somebody that has power and money. We know that lawyers have been paid off. We know other people have been paid off. We know there's all kinds of people get paid off. Politicians have paid off people to keep their mistresses' stories, or they paid off their mistresses or whoever else they had affairs with, women or men politicians, by the way. Mm-hmm. But people that have power and money or they are very valuable to a company will be forgiven, but they will be taken care of. And then the schmuck in the middle, which is usually us people listening to the radio and me and Dusty, we're the middle class, right? We're the ones that get squeezed. Okay? There are people that believe, and once again, this is people that believe that this whole thing with Shohei Ohtani is a front. Because Shohei Ohtani, there's no way Major League Baseball wants this guy going to prison for illegally betting or betting and spending all this money and betting on sports and integrity of the game and everything else. Now, it could be exactly what the story is, that this guy that was interpreter did all this stuff and Shohei didn't really know what was going on, so forth and so on. That could all be true. But there are some people that are way more knowledgeable than I am when it comes to the bookie business, bookmakers, betting, gambling. I stay out of it. And there, I've seen multiple people say, listen, this doesn't pass the smell test. But there are not a lot of people questioning because people have probably been paid off to protect the prized possession of Major League Baseball. Just like there are people that were paid off to be quiet after Tim Donaghy was going to be a whistleblower and they made him to be an isolated rogue official that was betting on games with the mafia. Listen, when you want to squash something, you want to cover something up, what do you normally do? If you're rich, you throw a lot of money at it. You use your connections and relationships to your betterment. You abuse the system. And so, is that what happened with Britt Reid and the Kansas City Chiefs? Possibly. Is that what could happen with Rasheed Rice? Possibly. Could that happen with Ben McLemore? Possibly. But if it's Felicia Miller, whose daughter has brain damage for the rest of her life because Britt Reid was an idiot, no, there isn't for her. And there isn't for Dusty, and there isn't for me, and there isn't probably for pretty much all of you out there listening today. So just understand, that's the world we live in. Money and power, somehow, some way, has a ton of influence. And it can get you out of things that normal people can't get out of. And I've said this before, and I did a whole research paper on this. And I've told this story, I think, once before on the show. When I was in high school, I had to do a research paper. The only one I remember doing, which I'm sure I did multiple ones, or I just procrastinated and forgot. But I did one, and I chose the death penalty. Okay, I decided to research the death penalty. And before I did my research, and boy, we need more people to do this today. Before I did my research, I was for the death penalty. I was like, hey, an eye for an eye. Then I studied up and had to do a big 15-page research paper in high school for a certain class. And I gathered tons of information, and I started going through it. And then I realized I live in a bubble. And I'm sheltered. And I read through this, and I read of so many circumstances where people were wrongfully accused but could not afford good representation, were assigned a public defender that had more cases than they could deal with, and they were found guilty because they just didn't have the money to represent themselves. They couldn't fight it. O.J. Simpson had tons of money to fight what happened with him. As does a lot of politicians that fight their things, including current politicians, We won't name names, but there's many of them out there. And so what I found when I did the research was, you know what? This is not as black and white as I thought. I was naive. I was in high school. I'm like, this is simple. You know, everybody that's found guilty is guilty, right? And if they killed somebody, they deserve to be killed. That was my thinking. I think I was 16, 17 at the time. I did the research and I started seeing people that were electrocuted and found out later they did nothing wrong. It was a false story. And in many cases, it was richer white people making up stories or accusing wrongfully, usually towards a black person. So before you jump to conclusions about Arteria Morris or Terrence Shannon Jr. or Ben McLemore, remember, you are innocent till proven guilty. Now, these athletes have better representation. They have more resources to protect themselves. But as I learned doing the research, and I was willing to actually believe what I read and grabbed lots of sources, at the end of the day, I was in the middle on the death penalty. If somebody has killed somebody and it was premeditated, I still am okay with the death penalty. But what I do know is there are a lot of people that have been on death row or have been wrongfully executed or went to the chair because they simply didn't have enough money to defend themselves against false accusations. And there are no repercussions for people that wrongfully accuse people anymore. I don't know if there ever was. Richard Jewell was wrongfully accused, ruined his life. He was the one that found the bomb in the park in Atlanta and then suddenly became the suspect, which made no damn sense. Ruined his life, okay? And nobody's apologized for that. I know one in particular person on a particular TV network. Her name is Nancy Grace, and I have no respect for this woman whatsoever, who ripped the Duke lacrosse players left and right and talked about how they were scoundrels, they were horrible people, they were animals, and all this other stuff. And guess what we found out? They're innocent.
They were innocent.
They're innocent. Did Nancy Grace get on her platform after she ripped all these people she had never met? Did she get back up there and then cry and profusely apologize to them for wrongfully accusing them and jump into conclusions? And instead of presuming that they're innocent till guilty, she just went ahead and convicted them? Hell no, she didn't. Are there any repercussions and consequences for her actions? No. You can smear a person's reputation and you can get away with it. So what I discovered with studying the death penalty is some people can go die, be killed, and they didn't do anything wrong. And when you get into, you could say it's a status thing, but it's more of a status slash power slash money situation. People that are higher up, top CEOs of companies, they usually get off with a slap on the wrist. The rich actors and actresses and politicians and athletes, they usually get away with stuff. We see it in college basketball. Why does Stephen F. Austin or some mid-range program get drilled with some kind of probation, but Kansas gets off, or Kentucky gets off, or Arizona gets off with a slap on the wrist? Why is that? Because Kansas is important to college basketball and ratings and money. Ratings translate into money. Which brings more ratings? Kansas, Duke, Kentucky, North Carolina, or Stephen F. Austin, or Stetson? It's pretty obvious, isn't it? So, if you got Shohei Ohtani and you've got an interpreter, if you can somehow pin it on the interpreter, you make a lot more people, and including the billionaire owners, even billionaires more, because Ohtani in baseball helps wherever he goes plays. If he goes to Kansas City, that helps John Sherman and the ownership group of the Royals because they're going to sell more tickets. And they're even going to buy price of merchandise at their store. They might have Ohtani jerseys even at a Royals shop.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? Those people are all going to benefit by helping cover up something. Now, I'm not saying, because I don't know. I'm just saying that there is a possibility that the interpreter is the fall guy in this thing. Or he's a co-conspirator and Ohtani is being protected. It also could be that it's absolutely legitimate and Ohtani did nothing wrong. I'm not accusing the man. But there are people that do gambling for a living that say this doesn't add up. And I'm not surprised, and I would not be surprised, because I think there's a ton of stuff that is covered up in our society today. A ton of it. And it usually starts from the people up top.
Yeah, the funny thing, like you're talking about the death row thing where people are there and then they've been accused and they've been found guilty and they're there and they've done nothing wrong. And there's a ton of movies and stories you can read and things like that about this. This wasn't a death penalty thing, but Brian Banks is the one that comes to mind for me, star football player, you know, at USC, and gets kind of what Ben McLemore is dealing with right now. And then he ends up in prison and he didn't do anything wrong. It was all made up. And so, you know, he's lost a chance to play in the NFL. You know, mm-hmm. he tried back out with, I think it was the Texans, once he got out of jail years later. But obviously he wasn't the same player, person, whatever. You can do whatever you can to keep yourself in shape, but you've lost it. You've lost an amount of your life that you're not young anymore. Now you're trying to do this again and try to redo it. And so, you know, there's all kinds of stories about these cases where they're not, you know, Brian Banks was more popular than some of them, but yeah. They're not people that are, you know, high stature Shohei Ohtani type names, right? And so they end up in a spot where they, and I think a big thing with a lot of this stuff is who's defending you too, and who you can pay for to defend you. So,
and the Tim Donaghy thing, the guy that was actually on Donaghy's side got paid to join the NBA side.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just like, you know, if somebody turns against you and has the money to take you down, that's easily can happen. If somebody's for you and you've done something wrong and it's obvious that you've done something wrong, you can still come out of there almost scot-free.
Right.
Like you just, whatever, we're going to fix this reputation, we're going to blame it on somebody else, and we're going to hand it to this person, and they'll deal with it.
Right.
You know, which is, if the interpreter, your Shohei was Ohtani example, if the interpreter is in the wrong, then he should pay for it. But if he's not, and Shohei is part of this deal, and they were doing it together, then it's a heck of a sword to fall on for the interpreter. So it's just like all these things that go on, all these stories that you see, and it's like, everything's not always black and white.
Right.
You got to look past the surface of things and understand what's actually going on.
Our news director, God rest his soul, no longer with us, Mike Schrant, him and I would talk about this a ton, especially off the air. Wade, there's nothing that's black and white.
Yeah.
And I said, sure there is. The sky is blue. Okay. Yeah. That's not black and white, but it's we can all agree the sky is blue. And he's like, no, you can even argue that. And then we'd argue about it.
Yeah.
But he always said there's nothing that's black and white. Now, I think there are a few things that are black and white, but I would agree with him that most of the stuff is gray. There's shades of gray. 50 shades? Never mind. Anyway, the NBA play-in tournament is getting close to happening. There's only a few games left in NBA regular season. As it sits now, the Lakers would play the Warriors in Golden State, and the loser would be eliminated. The Suns are the seventh seed with that stacked team that Kendrick Perkins and others said they're going to win the NBA title. I'm like, no, they're not. Kevin Durant and the Suns. You see what they were? They were down 37-8 the other day.
Yeah,
to the Clippers,
30-4.
Yeah, it was crazy. Bad. They got Durant, Booker, Bradley Beal. How's the superstar team doing? Not so good. They're a seventh seed, and right now they play the eighth seed, the Kings. Think of how hilarious the Lakers and Suns were both knocked out right off the bat in the play-in tournament. The Nuggets right now would be the one seed. They only have a one-game lead over the Thunder and the T-Wolves, so that could change. The T-Wolves are the two seed, the Thunder the three seed. The Thunder would play the Pelicans. That'd be a heck of a series. Clippers against the Mavericks. That'd be a heck of a series. 4-5 matchup. On the Eastern side, the Bulls, Billy Donovan. That's one thing Kentucky didn't want to wait, because Billy Donovan would have to wait until he was done with the NBA to go talk to Kentucky. The Hawks are the 10 seed. They would be at the Bulls in a play-in game. The Sixers are the 7th seed with Joel Embiid against the 8th seed Heat. Wow, what a play-in game that is. That's the Sixers with Embiid are way better than the record would show. He missed some time, a couple months. The Heat went to the NBA Finals last year. And the winner of the Sixers-Heat, the winner of that game would play the Bucks in the first round. Wow. By the way, I try to tell people Dame Lillard doesn't really help the Bucks that much. You're actually better with Jrue Holiday. Yep, record-wise, they were better with Jrue Holiday.
Yeah.
By the way, Jrue Holiday plays with the Celtics. Who has the best record in the NBA by far?
The Celtics.
Boston Celtics. Celtics are the one seed. The Cavs are the four with Dean Wade. He's the star of that team. Everybody knows that. They will host the Magic, it appears. The Knicks, the three seed, would take on the Pacers, the six seed. I will say, I know a lot of people don't care about the NBA too much, but if I'm ever going to watch the NBA, I want to watch the playoffs because they actually try to play defense and try to win and play harder.
They still probably don't officiate it worth a dang in regards to letting them do whatever.
No.
But I will say these are some very interesting series. I mean, the Lakers-Warriors game is going to get a good rating. The Suns-Kings is really amazing stuff. Clippers and Mavericks, either one of those teams could make a run to the finals. The Thunder and Pelicans, that's two young and up-and-coming teams. The T-Wolves have done amazing, and they're a two-seed, and Anthony Edwards is the real deal. And then on the Eastern side, it's pretty much the Celtics. Who's going to beat the Celtics? Because they're way better. The Celtics have 62 wins. No other team in the East has 50. So they're the heavy favorite. Mm-hmm. But the Magic are up and coming team take on the Cavs. The Knicks Pacers is a heck of a series. Remember the day with Reggie Miller against Patrick Ewing? And then if the Bucks play the Sixers or even the Heat in the first round, which I think that'd be the third straight year the Bucks and Heat would play early in the playoffs, that's intriguing. So There's some good stuff out there when it comes to NBA playoffs, and so if you're not really big in the NBA, I think the playoffs are a whole different animal.
I miss my team being part of it.
Well, yeah, when did the Spurs play?
23 years that they made it, and it's like, oh man,
there's good times ahead though.
Yeah,
there's good times ahead. By the way, how much head coaching experience did Greg Popovich have before he took the Spurs job?
None.
The answer is none, and he's won 5 NBA titles and could have easily been 6. So sometimes the guy that you think is the home run and you don't get him, you're so disappointed, and then you end up being really happy with your consolation prize. Sometimes the consolation prize is the prize.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not. Have a great weekend, everyone.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.